we inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. Walker Wildman here with you today on the program. We're live here from our national headquarters in Tupelo, Mississippi. And good to be with you today on the program. Under 30 days before the election. And November 5th is the date. Vote, vote, vote. Register, register, register. And do that in reverse order. Register, register, register. And then vote, vote, vote. All the information you need on the election is at ivoterguide.com. That's available for free at ivoterguide.com. Psalm 131 is where we are this week. O Lord, my heart is not proud, nor my eyes haughty. Nor do I involve myself in great matters or in things too difficult for me. Surely I have composed and quieted my soul like a weaned child rests against his mother. My soul is like a weaned child within me. O Israel, hope is in the Lord from this time forth and forever. So this is Psalm 131. And what you're getting is you're getting a message of humility and a message of understanding your place here in Psalm 131. So as believers, we need to understand our place. We need to understand our limits, and we also need to understand our ability and our threshold for what we can and can't handle. We need to use wisdom and discernment to understand situations that we can't handle, that are over our head, and know when to pull back. That's pretty much the message of Psalm 131, is using wisdom and discernment to understand our place and our role and our temperament and our ability to handle situations. And in this case, the writer really humbles himself. He really backs down and puts more trust and hope and leanings in the Lord. That's Psalm 131. Let's see. Let's jump into some stories. I want to get to this first segment. We do have guests in the second and the third. You don't want to miss those interviews. But for this segment, I want to hone in on a couple things. One thing that I have to mention, and I should mention, is that this is the one-year anniversary of the horror that happened on October 7th, 2023 in Israel. Over 1,200 Israelis slaughtered, men, women, and children included. And an important number to remember today, 1 year out, is that there are nearly 100 hostages still in captivity. Now, we don't know about their well-being. We don't know if they're alive, if they're dead. But there are 97 hostages still missing, seven of which are American citizens. All right, so nearly 100 hostages 1 year after the attack on Israel by Hamas. And where is President Biden and where is Vice President Harris? I mean, this is a scandal among scandals. If any other president was sitting around 1 year after a massive terror attack and 97 hostages were still missing, including seven Americans, folks, that is a big, big deal. So we don't need to forget that. Dozens of hostages have already been killed while in captivity. Of course, 1,200 plus died on the day of the attack, but hundreds have died in captivity, or dozens rather, have died in captivity, and there's still nearly 100 that are being held hostage, of which we don't know about their well-being. We don't even know if they're still alive because we just don't know. But 1 year is today. Today marks 1 year from that attack. Well, speaking of that, we've got to connect all this in because it is all very much connected. But Iran is funding it all. Let's don't forget that. There's Hamas, there's Hezbollah, but Iran is funding it all. All right. And you can call Hezbollah and Hamas proxies. And, you know, that's really a debate over semantics and terminology. But in my opinion, proxies is a little bit too loose. Okay. There is direct connections between the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps and Hezbollah and Hamas members. And how do we know that? Because when Israel launched the pager attack and blew up all of the pager communication tools back a few weeks ago, what did we uncover? Well, there were dozens, if not over 100, Iranians that were injured on that attack. Well, why were they injured, Walker? Because they were carrying Hezbollah pager systems. Okay, so the interconnectedness between Iran and Hezbollah is one and the same. They are interwoven, folks. I mean, Iran is not even trying to hide it anymore. They are directly sending arms to Hezbollah. And Israel's tracking the flights. I mean, Iran had the audacity to try to land at Beirut International Airport with a weapons flight, with ammunition and weapons for Hezbollah. So this is no secret. Hezbollah and Hamas are basically operating arms of the IRGC. And the word proxy is honestly not strong enough when you look at the actual connections between Iran and these forces around Israel. Well, did you know that Biden has loosened the sanctions on Iran? I didn't realize this. I knew that we gave them billions of dollars, but I didn't realize that basically under Biden's administration, they've allowed Iran to flourish in the oil market and increase their oil production and exports because they did not maintain the tough sanctions that President Trump had on Iran. Let's get a little bit of background here. This is a CNBC clip talking about the impact of Israeli potential strikes on Iran's oil market and how Biden has made it easy for Iran to sell oil on the international stage. Clip two.
Give us a sense. The Iranians were not producing much oil that many years ago. They've obviously moved production up, most of it going to what, China and India, correct?
I mean, China is the principal buyer of Iranian barrels, but we've seen Iran, as you mentioned, 5 years ago, you know, we saw more significant sanctions enforcement. Now we have Iranian oil at about a six-year high. And so I do think the White House is now talking about potentially tougher sanctions enforcement in an effort to maybe get the Israelis to hold their fire. But we would be potentially talking around, you know, 1.7 million barrels a day of exports if a major terminal is hit. And again, I think the bigger question would be, would the Iranians in turn look to target, for example, ships in the Straits of Hormuz? They did that in 2019. They hit tankers off the coast of UAE. Would they go after major pipelines in the region? They certainly retain the capacity to do damage to regional energy infrastructure. The question is, what would be on their target list?
So Israel is reportedly preparing a strike on Iran. What that looks like, we don't know yet. But that was news to me that I knew Biden was soft on Iran, but I didn't know he was permitting them to sell their oil to China and Russia and other bad actors on the international stage. So Biden has created this environment where Iran is stronger than they were under Trump. Thus, they're able to fund Hezbollah and Hamas. And by the way, Biden, why is it that every time Israel is talking about striking their enemies, Biden is trying to talk them off the ledge? Biden is trying to talk them down into not striking their enemies. What is this? What is this? All he has to say to Iran is don't, and they always do. And Israel is trying to defend itself and decapitate these animals. And all Biden has to do is criticize Israel over and over and over again. We ought to be thanking Israel because they're doing the hard work for us. They're doing the hard work for us. And this has been a major test for Biden and Harris, and they have utterly and completely failed. So, and not to mention the election implications here, we have to mention those. The if Israel strikes Iranians' oil capacity, it's going to cause oil prices to go up. It shouldn't. We shouldn't be in this position where the world is relying on Iranian oil. That's a problem in and of itself. But this whole Israel retaliatory strike on Iran could really bring to light some glaring issues that aren't being talked about, including why on earth are we permitting Iran to sell oil to China and Russia and others? Well, that's because Biden lessened the sanctions. And so we very well could have spiking oil cost, or spiking oil prices in the next few weeks right before the election. Also, Biden and Harris, they're heavily conflicted here, because Harris wants to get elected. And so, of course, they don't want Israel to strike the Iranian oil positions. So they're going to do everything they can to prevent them from striking their oil positions. And of course, we don't know where Kamala Harris stands on a lot of this because she doesn't do interviews. One of her surrogates actually admitted on CNN this week, this past week, that, you know, she doesn't really care. This surrogate doesn't really care if she does interviews. She doesn't really need to do interviews. America doesn't really need to hear what Kamala Harris thinks or what she has to say about the issues of our day. Let's listen to clip one.
You know, honestly, I was one of those that said, I don't care if she does an interview at all. And I'm going to be honest with you. Listen, she is running a historic campaign in a historic amount of time. And so when you're trying to figure out which one you should really take the time to do, I honestly am the type of person that believes in taking your message to the people. You know, when we consistently hear things like, well, people say that they don't know her and that kind of stuff, I think that they actually want to interact with her. And I honestly think that that is actually where she is her strongest, when she's able to actually be there with the people, feel the energy of the people, and the people be able to feel her sincerity in the policy positions that she's taking and in her message of trust me, because I will take this country forward instead of allowing it to go back. So I think that this is just a very different election. And I think that she's doing the best that she can with the minimal amount of time that she's got left to get this done.
There's a lot packaged in there, Bobby.
I think they call that a tap dance routine.
Yeah. Do you like how she said, you know, I don't really care if she does interviews, but she needs to get her message out to the people. I don't really care if she does media interviews, but she's got to get her message out to the people. What?
Yeah. Yeah. And how do you do that?
Right. So, and the lead up to that question, the CNN host actually, you know, made a statement that, look, Kamala Harris has only done three major sit-down interviews in recent months. Folks, the underlying problem here, we could get into campaign strategy and optics, but let's talk about what really matters. What really matters is voters don't know what Kamala Harris thinks about the issues of our day. That's what it boils down to. We're in a position where we don't know Kamala Harris's policy positions on the key issues of our day. And that's the fundamental problem. This is a ghost campaign if there ever was one. Shrouded in secrecy is the motto of the Kamala Harris campaign. And it's either one of two things here, and it could be a little bit of both. It's because Kamala Harris doesn't really have a core, and she'll say and do anything to get elected. And so why do interviews and talk specificity when she doesn't really know what she believes? Or it could be that Kamala Harris is one of the most Marxist, left-wing, communist, socialist candidates that we've had in American history, and that's beating Obama and Biden. And she doesn't want to open her mouth more than she has to, because then America might actually figure out that we're voting on whether we want a Marxist to be in the White House for 4 or 8 more years. So it's either one of two. Either she's extremely shallow and she doesn't even know herself what she believes, or she's a Marxist and she doesn't want us to know. One of the two is likely true.
Share-a-thon is my favorite part of a broadcast year. mostly because I love to hear those AFR stories. And Share-a-thon is also important because it provides our ministry with the finances we need to continue our work for another 6 months. Twice a year, we open the phones for 3 days to ask our listeners to support us as we push back the darkness in the name of our Lord Jesus.
Fall Share-a-thon is coming October 8th through the 10th, and it's your chance to partner with us in a tangible way.
It's a festive atmosphere during Share-a-thon. Many of our remote hosts come to Tupelo for the show. Volunteers come and help on the phones, and listeners call us from all over the country with financial pledges of support and encouragement. I love doing our usual shows, but I especially love Share-a-thon.
Join us October 8th through the 10th for Share-a-thon on American Family Radio. At the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. We're continuing our election 2024 discussion. I got to play a clip before you introduce our next guest, and this is a brief one. It's only about 18 seconds. But let me tell you, folks, the left and the Democrats, they are currently in the midst of a freakout session. They are losing their mind session because they are seeing voter enthusiasm on social media platforms lean heavily in favor of President Trump and conservative or Republican candidates across the board. So they are entering overdrive in an effort to deplatform and censor anything that's not Marxist or left-leaning on these platforms. We're witnessing this in real time. And to prove my point, here's a quick clip of Hillary Clinton recently.
And if the platforms, whether it's Facebook or Twitter X or Instagram or TikTok, whatever they are, if they don't moderate and monitor the content, we lose total control. And it's not just the social and psychological effects, it's real harm.
We lose total control if we don't take these Christians off the internet. Well, on to talk with us about this very topic is Craig Huey. He's an economist, author, and commentator, and is with us now on the program. Hey, Craig, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's great to be with you.
Well, Craig, we're having you on to answer the question and the topic about Google, one of the yes, largest tech companies, the largest search engine, but one of the largest yes, tech companies more broadly in the country, about their influence and their control over the way we think about things. Give us a backgrounder here.
Well, sure. Let's talk about it and apply it to this upcoming election, because it's really election interference on steroids. So basically, they have 86% market share here in the U.S. Everybody even says, hey, I'm going to Google something, even if they use a different platform. Mm-hmm. And basically what you have is an ideologically driven platform that's dedicated to advancing kind of a socialist, secular ideology. And that's what they've been successful with. You know, back in 2016, when they saw that Trump won, they were in tears. They promised they would never let this happen again. And what they're doing now in this election is two things. One, every time people do searches, there's going to be invisible, they don't even know it, invisible bias and indoctrination. And then number two, they're doing forms of what's called micro-targeting. And the micro-targeting is to Hispanics. They get certain messages. To those who are on student loans, they get certain messages. Anybody that's in a micro-targeted group of Kamala Harris, they get special messages. And for anybody, if you and I went ahead and did a Google search right now for Trump, we would find that there would be Washington Post, New York Times, and MSNBC, and all the radical left biased media articles and videos against Trump. But if you do Harris, everything's good and everything's great. And they started doing this during the primary. The primary was disgusting in how they really manipulated the results. And so it's bias and censorship, it's invisible manipulation, and it's election interference. It should not be happening. But the reality is, it is. And so if you're a low information voter, if you're in those swing states, let's just take the 6.9 million evangelicals in those swing states that did not vote in 2020. Well, let me just tell you what's going to happen. They're going to do any type of Google searches. They're going to get things that demonize Trump from Kamala, evangelicals for Harris, that group, and those type of groups. So it is a invisible manipulation. And remember, Google owns YouTube, and it does the same thing on YouTube. It has Gmail. I mean, there just was a major lawsuit with the Republican National Committee because they had censored every single fundraising piece that the National Committee had sent out. Mm-hmm. And now they have AI. So Gemini AI that rewrites history. And so this is something that everybody has to realize is happening, and there's nothing we can do about it right now.
Let me ask you this, Craig. Once again, we're talking to Craig Huey about Google's election interference. This is really an untried arena that I'm aware of. Maybe there's a little bit of case law on it. But as far as in-kind election contributions and basically non-cash contributions to campaigns, have you looked into suing or like people suing these platforms that intentionally go out of their way to help candidates and don't mark it as an FCC contribution? Have you studied that any?
Oh, yeah. There have been lawsuits against Google for that very issue of in-kind contributions because it's in the millions. Hmm. And they've all been thrown out of court. But at some point in time, that will become a court case, and Google will lose if it's brought up. And I hope, hopefully, you know, if Trump gets it, we're going to have a good Supreme Court. If Trump doesn't, we have a window of opportunity before one or two of these court judges resign and new ones are appointed. Yeah. So, but it is a court issue. But here's the one thing you should know. Everyone, Google, with a radical judicial activist judge, found Google guilty of being a monopoly. And Google is shaking in its boots because they now have a court case to break them up and to say that they had unfair practices in keeping their monopoly. So they're shaking over that. And one other thing they're shaking over is that the whole trend for their marketing and their revenue is towards AI, and AI is what Microsoft and Bing is going to be doing. Everybody's going to be doing AI, and when you go right now for searches on AI, it's superior than if you do ones that traditional search. They're seeing their revenue model collapse, and not only that, they're petrified of Elon Musk, who's pouring billions into a new AI to compete with them on search. And so, you know, that's where the government and Google find Elon Musk their number one enemy right now.
Let me ask you this, Craig. What are some ways that users, for example, I use different search engines. I use DuckDuckGo. Yes. There's a few other options out there. I occasionally find myself back on Google, but just because some of their results are more accurate than maybe other platforms when you're searching non-election related topics. But nonetheless, what are some tips you can give to users out there?
Well, tip number one, when you use Google, go to about page 8 or 10. 90% of all people only go to the first page because all the radical left stuff is at the top. If you go way deep down, buried way down, you're going to maybe find something from the AFA, or you're going to find something from Town Hall or from Newsmax or something. Now, If you want to go to DuckDuck, it's actually a little bit more objective, but it's still biased. But it's a little bit more objective, and it's getting away from Google. Anything to get away from Google is a positive. Hmm. And then the other thing is change your Gmail. Don't let them censor it. You've got a conservative newsletter. You've got different types of communication from Christians. They're going to be more likely to be censored than not. Get away from Gmail and go to a different type of email. So those are a couple of the things. And then actually stop using search and really try doing like OpenAI until Elon Musk has his AI. Look at OpenAI, not Gemini, and do some searches, and you'll be very pleasantly surprised that even though the ones who created the algorithms have an absolute prejudice against conservatives, Christians, and libertarians, that they hate Republicans, the fact is there's more objectivity and there's more information you can get that you couldn't get because you don't want to go 50 pages in a search. The AI will put it closer to the top that you can see it in its answers.
Well, one thing also to your point, Craig, that we need to do is make sure we're clicking on reputable sources.
Yes.
Like conservative media outlets, because that helps them in the algorithm. To your point, don't click on the first CNN article or the first MSNBC article. Go to page 3, 4, 5, 6 of the Google search and click on reputable conservative media outlets in order to help their ranking on the algorithm that's already really bent against them. Craig, for those out there, once again, we're talking to Craig Huey about Google's manipulation in the election. For people out there that say, well, it's kind of rigged against us, but it can't be like election changing rigged. The Hunter Biden laptop story is really exhibit A in this, that it can alter the outcome of the election, because I think it was like 60% of voters, including Democrats, said had they known about the Hunter Biden story, they would have voted differently in the 2020 election. So answer that critique that this just is an election determining.
Oh, it can determine the election. Like right now, the whole media, including Google, including Bing, and including AI, is saying Trump is a liar, he's being deceptive, and FEMA is doing a great job. And it's got that narrative. So it's one attack after another. And if you're a low information person who is more likely to be the swing voter, I don't really know who Harris is. And I don't know. I don't really think I like Trump. And I don't know. I think I should vote. Well, it is going to be biased, and it's going to help sway people to go for Harris. The most important thing, again, I'll circle back to what I began in the beginning, the micro-targeting. And so, again, there right now, if Harris, evangelicals for Harris, can confuse and suppress the vote, where Christians, evangelical born-again Christians say, I don't know about Trump's integrity. And they don't think of the policy. They see these old clips from 10 years ago of Trump in news stories, and then they have certain pastors coming up with Bible verses. That's the videos they keep sending to Christians in the 6 swing states. If you're a Christian, that's all you're seeing on YouTube and Instagram and Facebook. You're seeing these things. It's the whole idea is to say, I'm not even bothering to vote. And like in Arizona, Trump lost by, and Biden won by 10,000 votes. Hmm. And it was under 20,000 in Georgia, and it was only about 50,000 in Pennsylvania. Those are like one or two churches would sway that race, and we'd have a different 4 years than we've had. And that's what they hope they can do. The Christians that voted and the Christians that didn't vote in the last election, get them to say, I'm not going to vote this time. And then all of a sudden, conservatives and Christians running for school board and city council and state races and Senate and the presidency, they're going to sit it out.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Hey, Craig, thanks so much for coming on the program. Appreciate your work on this topic.
Absolutely. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Craig. That's Craig Huey. He's an economist, author, and commentator, and has written extensively on this subject. And we're going to link to that, his latest column on the rundown on the show notes on the podcast page. And just to answer that you know, the contrarian position of elections and politics is dirty and I don't want to be involved in it, and Trump's a mean person and he's done bad things before and things like that. Folks, if anyone who is a student of history, we all ought to be to some degree. Government is not the church. That's abundantly clear. That's like theology 101. But government is an institution that God himself set up. He created one of the major institutions that God himself created. And this wish, this desire that politics and government be this squeaky clean, righteous, pure business, is it's fantasy land, folks. It's complete fantasy land. We are actually, comparatively, Christians in America are set up, I would argue, the best that they've ever been set up in world history when it comes to being able to exercise their civic duties in a way that is honoring to God. And let me explain why. Because we actually have choices. All right, not every Christian throughout human history has actually been able to vote. As a matter of fact, the majority of them have just had to make do with whatever dictator or king was placed in power while they lived within that said country, that said nation throughout human history. So we are abundantly blessed, Christians are, that we can actually engage in a civil process of electing our leaders. And we can do so without fear of being beheaded, without fear of being hunted down by the king, like our ancestors past. And so it's time to just get off this moral high horse, this fantasy land thinking that civics and government will someday be clean and pure, but it's just not clean and pure now, folks. This world is a fallen world. We are living in our sin nature, and we have to make the best do with the options that we have.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to the core. Well, as if I spoke it into existence, breaking just now from Newsmax, the United States is now offering Israel, quote-unquote, compensation to avoid strikes on Iranian sites, i.e., the Biden administration has offered Israel a compensation package if it refrains from striking certain targets in Iran as part of its retaliation for Tehran's October 1 attack on Israel. Israel's Khan News public broadcaster reported on Sunday U.S. officials offered their Israeli counterparts extensive diplomatic backing and additional military aid if certain targets inside Iran territory were spared, according to the report. Folks, you cannot make this stuff up. The U.S. is trying to pay off Israel for not striking Iran. The U.S. is doing the bidding of Iran here. This is unbelievable. And I told you this the first segment before reading this report, that this is what the Biden team's going to do. They're going to try to talk Israel out of striking Iran. I mean, this ought to be Trump. He better be talking about this. This is big news out of Washington. And the Biden team's desperate. I told you the implications of an Iranian strike. Oil prices are going to spike. Iranian oil capacity is going to drop. And energy prices are going to go up right before the election. And Biden and Harris just can't afford to let that happen. I mean, they just can't afford to let that happen. So what are they going to do? They're going to use our tax dollars to try to bribe or extort Israel, whichever term you want to use, from striking Iran. So that's just breaking within the last hour. Introducing our next guest for the next topic we're going to talk about. Speaking of international affairs, Alex Newman's with us now. He's CEO of Liberty Sentinel Media, and he's here to talk about the UN and the things that they're doing to try to spread their tentacles in our daily lives. Alex Newman, welcome to the Core.
Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, Alex, we've had on guests before to talk about the threat that the WHO has, the World Health Organization has, on our daily lives. And the UN is really no different. They're equally a threat to our national sovereignty. So give us a little background here.
Well, thanks again for having me on, Walker. And I just got back from the UN Summit of the Future. This was a hugely significant meeting. They prepared for a long time in advance. They actually marketed it as, we're transforming the UN from UN to UN 2.0. Those are their terms, not mine. As the Secretary General put it over and over again, we can't build a future for our grandchildren using institutions built by our grandparents. So they're talking about dramatic transformations here for the UN, the World Health Organization, of course, being one arm of the UN, one specialized agency of the UN. And when you read the outcome document from this meeting, the so-called Pact for the Future, which was passed by consensus, in other words, every government in the world, at the very least, allowed it to get through, they are calling for essentially what they did during COVID, what the WHO did to the world during COVID over the last 4 years or so, extend that out to every area of life, education, the environment, the economy, you name it. And they've even got a special provision in there, action item number 54 in this international agreement, that calls for making the United Nations, and in particular the Secretary General, the central coordinating mechanism for dealing with global emergencies. So we're talking about a massive transfer of power, Walker, from sovereign nation states to the United Nations and its agencies.
Alex, this is... these agencies are these institutions, rather, like the United Nations. They tend to be hijacked by the Marxist and by the communist around the world, and really, in many cases, don't work in the best interest of America. How much talk about the kind of the jurisdiction here, because obviously this. The UN in and of itself doesn't really have any jurisdiction anywhere, practically speaking. But the fact that the U.S. buys into this, both financially and otherwise, really creates problems. So just talk about that whole structure of how an international agency like this or institution can actually have, you know, real-life implications domestically.
Yeah, thank you, Walker. And this is such an important topic for people to wrap their heads around, because it is going to affect every area of your life going forward. So when you go back 80 years, when they were creating the UN in San Francisco, we were told this is just about peace. We just want to try to prevent another world war. So we're not even talking about sovereignty. We're not talking about giving the UN jurisdiction over anything. This is just for nations to come together, really governments, and work out plans for peace without resorting to war. Well, if you go back to that first meeting where they created the UN, where they wrote the UN Charter in San Francisco, the handwriting was already on the wall, Walker. Let's start with one of the main individuals involved in the creation of this, supposedly an American. His name was Alger Hiss, very little known today, although extremely prominent at the time. He was the chairman of the conference that wrote the UN Charter. Then they made him the first Secretary General of the United Nations. And again, he's supposed to be an American. Now, that should have been a big red flag. Why is Stalin okay with an American leading all these meetings? Well, we found out later. We ended up prosecuting him. We threw him in federal prison because he was a spy for Joseph Stalin, one of the worst mass murdering butchers to ever walk on this planet. So that's a pretty big red flag right there. Another one of the key Americans who was involved was John Foster Dulles, Secretary of State at the time. And he wrote an incredible book in 1950 called War or Peace. And in this book, he actually reveals the game plan. He says the UN today is just the primitive stage. But ultimately, he says, even under the current UN charter, we can make this into a world federation, or world government is the term he used in his book, and that is where we're going with this. And he said it in very clear English right in his book published in 1950. So right from the very beginning, Marx's tentacles and fingerprints were all over this thing. And right from the very beginning, they had this ambition of drastically expanding the UN to eventually encompass not just peace, but the environment, the economy, sustainable development, your health care, all of it. And so we're moving very rapidly now toward this UN 2.0 that will actually play a major role, not just in our healthcare like we saw during COVID, not just in our education like we're seeing through UNESCO, but in every area of life.
Alex, once again, we're talking to Alex Newman about the threat of the United Nations on American sovereignty in our daily lives. When you look at the concept of the UN, it's a very much unbiblical and unconstitutional concept. And here's why. Let me explain that. The Bible talks about nations and borders. It doesn't talk about one world government, except in Revelation, which is not a very good thing. So, and then our founding fathers made it abundantly clear that the broader the power, the more likelihood for corruption. This is why we have checks and balances. This is why you have a 10th Amendment, so states have a certain degree of sovereignty. And so if we're having trouble in America in 2024, like preserving the basic fundamentals of freedom and liberty and virtue, what makes us think and our nation's leaders think that we can have a United Nations that is doing anything good?
That is such a good point, Walker. And I tell people this all the time. I mean, you think the federal government's bad now, you can vote them out of office, right? Wait until these powers are exercised by the United, I call it the United Abominations. And you're absolutely right about the Bible, right? I encourage people, go read Deuteronomy chapter 32. Go read Acts chapter 17. God is crystal clear that it was his idea, it was his design to divide mankind up into nations. You can read that whole story in Genesis chapter 11. They tried to build their goofy tower and God came down and confused their languages. And that is right there, the genesis of nations. That was God's design for humanity. He did it on purpose, with a purpose. Now they want to rebuild this one world system where we're all going to come together and we're going to defy God. And you're right about the Constitution too. I really want people to think about this. Our Constitution was based on the same principles that we find in the Declaration of Independence, which were based on the principles that we read in the Bible. God said, thou shalt not murder, therefore you have a right to life. God said, government must punish evil, murder is evil, therefore the government has an obligation to help you protect your right to life. Same is true with property. God said, don't steal, you have a right to property, theft is evil, therefore government has to help you protect your God-given right to life and property and liberty and all the rest. Now you look at the UN model, it's exactly the opposite. You have no rights, you're granted some privileges in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Article 29 says none of these rights and privileges can ever be used contrary to the purposes and principles of the UN. So it's completely backwards. And these aren't just different visions. These are visions that are fundamentally incompatible. They cannot both exist at the same time. So to the extent that the UN extends its power, extends its jurisdiction, and by the way, there was never any constitutional authority for Congress to surrender these authorities to the UN. In fact, many of these authorities they never even had, right? The U.S. Constitution doesn't give the federal government any jurisdiction over health care or education. And yet now the federal government wants to delegate those powers to the UN. It's totally crazy. It's totally unbiblical. It's totally unconstitutional. And people are starting to get it. I think that's why, for the most part, Americans haven't even heard about this Summit of the Future or the Pact for the Future. The yeah. media knows, the politicians know that Americans will not go for this if they're given the facts.
Yeah, that's right. And we have to have national leaders in Congress and the White House that completely resist this whole idea of one world government, global order, UN, WHO. It's really gotten to a point, Alex, and I know you probably know this better than me, but it's gotten to a point where these institutions aren't really any good anymore. I mean, they've totally veered off track. They're not even doing what they were set up for, and they're doing more harm than good on the world stage. We can have alliances. We can have partnerships around the world, and we should for the advancement of good and peace and prosperity. But setting up some kind of one world government with any type of binding authority is a terrible, terrible idea. We can't even get our own house in order. We're sitting at $35 trillion in debt. Divorce rate at 50%, families falling apart, economy falling apart, abortion on demand, and we think we're going to somehow have a, you know, UN, one world government with prosperity. I mean, who are we kidding here? Alex, tell our folks where they can read more about your work.
Well, thank you again for having me on the program. My personal website is libertysentinel.org, and also senior editor at The New American. I was covering the UN Summit of the Future for The New American magazine. They can find us at thenewamerican.com, and newsletter absolutely free at libertysentinel.org. And thank you again for having me on the program, Walker.
Yeah, thanks so much, Alex. Appreciate you coming on. Thanks so much. Appreciate the work. That's Alex Newman, CEO of Liberty Sentinel, and he was talking about his experience at the UN summit and their master plans for global one world government. And folks, this is not, you know, the left, I'm convinced, I have to do my study on this, but I'm convinced the left, if they didn't create the term conspiracy theory, they definitely hijacked it at some point and turned it into a dirty word, into a bad word. But this is not conspiracy stuff. This is reality. I mean, these folks, whether it be the UN or the WHO, they talk about this stuff openly and publicly. We just don't listen to it. We just don't pay attention to it. I mean, if you watch World Health Organization meetings, if you watch United Nations meetings, they talk about the goal of a one world government. That's what they talk about. And then when you're talking about Revelation type stuff, these meetings, they talk about a digital ID that's somewhere on your skin or implanted in your body. I mean, these are concepts that are like, there's no way people are talking about this, but they actually talk about it. They strategize about it. They produce reports about it. And they do it all from these global agencies. So this is not conspiracy stuff. This is reality. And there are people that want to do evil things, and they're talking about it publicly. Well, one montage that I came across that I just got to get in that fits the topic of today. I've told my audience multiple times that Kamala Harris is notoriously unpopular, even among Democrats. She was polling 1% in 2020 when she ran against Biden. And so I'm just having a hard time believing that she's all of a sudden neck and neck with Trump. But we'll see when it comes to Election Day. I think she definitely has more momentum than Biden. But I want to kind of take us back over the last 4 to 6 years and remind our audience that previously Kamala Harris has been very much unliked by Democrats and the media. Let's listen to this montage of people talking. These are Democrats talking about Kamala Harris. Clip 4.
There are reports that say that you have the lowest approval rating of any vice president.
Well, there are polls that also say I have great approval ratings.
Swing voters don't like Harris. How big a drag is Kamala Harris on the ticket?
She's a pretty big drag. I think she was arguably Biden's worst political decision.
They don't like her. There's lots of reasons they don't like her.
Kamala Harris's approval rating is now at 28%, which is an historic low for any modern vice president.
We're hearing it from mainstream media, one outlet after another, one leak after another, that Kamala Harris is the worst vice president ever, the worst politician ever.
We don't see the vice president. What people are saying to me, and I'm sure they're saying it to you, where's the vice president?
Some White House officials are feeling that she came off looking unprepared for inevitable questions about when she might visit the southern border.
We've been to the border.
You haven't been to the border.
I haven't been to Europe. And I don't understand the point that you're making.
The point that Lester Holt was making was obvious to anyone else who was watching this interview, which is that the issues at the border are inextricably linked with the portfolio that she's been given.
The border is secure. We have a secure border.
Bidenomics is working.
Prices have gone up. And families and individuals are dealing with the realities that bread costs more, that gas costs more. And we have to understand what that means. That's about the cost of living going up.
He picked Kamala Harris to be his running mate. She was ranked and is ranked as the most liberal senator in the United States Senate. So he could have gone the other way, but he went to the left.
Joe Biden is running for re-election, and I will be his ticket mate. Full stop.
Well, there you have it, folks. That's a montage of what the Democrats and the media think about Kamala Harris.
Preborn celebrates that Roe versus Wade has been overturned. Roe has been responsible for the slaughter of over 63 million babies. Now the decision to abort a child will be left in the hands of the states, and sadly, abortions will continue in the most liberal states. Over the past 16 years, Preborn has positioned their clinics in the top abortion cities where 50% of abortions occur. Preborn's work of saving babies' lives continues at an even greater level as they save babies' lives and defend their centers from the radical hate groups who want to shut them down. Preborn's response is dependent on you, the pro-life community. Be a part of rescuing lives and changing hearts for Christ. $28 sponsors one ultrasound, and $140 will help to rescue five babies' lives. Dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or go to preborn.com. All gifts are tax deductible.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.